Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
Beta, 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 beta. Beta.
Beta, beta, beta.
Beta to you. Beta, beta, beta. Happy beta. May the beta be with you.
It is with me, and also with you.
Ah, it is. It is. I got all the betas here. On my desk, I have all the betas. Literally on my desk right now, all the betas are here.
I think I don't
have... But hovering above my desk is my iMac, which is not on a beta. But beneath it, there's a phone, an iPad, and a Mac with beta on it.
I have those. I don't have the watch beta yet because the public beta for that has not arrived. There is a developer beta, but not yet the public beta.
Also, I have... You know what? I have never... ever installed a watch beta.
I have. I think last year I did.
I use my watch. I don't want it to be broken. It's already
kind of on the
edge.
I mean, I use my phone, too.
Yeah, that's true. I just feel like the phone is still functional mostly on betas, but like the watch, I'm like, you know, I feel like the watch is teetering on the edge of being falling apart at all times when I'm using it. Like, because I went back on Couch to 5K, and I'm simultaneously streaming a podcast in Overcast and using Intervals Pro to tell me when to run and when to stop. And like two apps doing audio over Bluetooth to AirPods and all of that. And like, look at that funny and it all falls apart, right? Install a beta on it and just forget it. You just get another watch.
Yeah, right. Dual watch it. Dual watch it. No, I mean, I think, you know, on the rebound a couple weeks ago, we talked about the beta. And I think, you know, Lex made the point that I and several other people have been thinking is like, normally I would be hesitant to put the beta on my phone.
Yeah. But where are you going? Yeah.
Where am I going? I'm going to the grocery store once a week. I'm going on a walk every day. That's about it.
Yep.
I will live if my phone is kind of, you know, wonky. And, you know, honestly, so far, it's been fine. Although this morning I tried to launch my New York Times crossword puzzle app on my phone and it kept crashing. But it worked on the iPad.
That's Facebook. That was that Facebook API.
I thought so, but it worked fine on the iPad, and I was very puzzled by that. So
I don't understand any of that. Actually, that makes me think of Gruber's post yesterday. I don't know if you read it.
Oh yeah, about the App Store.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah. I mean, I think there's an aspect of it that's kind of modest proposal-y, where I'm not sure I'm not sure you're meant to take him literally, but I'm surprised he didn't make this point, because he made it about like, well, if you're gonna kick things out of the App Store, reject apps because they aren't cutting you in for 30%. Why don't you reject apps that are bad? And I think, like, I like that piece a lot, and he's a very talented writer, and we're lucky to have him writing about stuff we care about, because he's very, very good at what he does. However, what I would say is, Apple has not shied away from putting down ultimatums about adopting new technologies, right? So Apple will say, by this date, apps won't be allowed in the App Store unless they support X, right? Like that just, they do that from time to time.
Right. We had that, I posted that thing, I don't know, 2 weeks ago by the AnyList people talking about signing with Apple. And that's exactly what they've done with signing with Apple, is say, by this date, you need to have implemented this if you have met these criteria.
Right. So I look at that and I think, it's not about rejecting apps per se, like because they're bad. And I think this is kind of a modest proposal kind of thing, because what he's really saying is that Apple's priorities are a little bit out of whack, because they seem to be very concerned about squeezing money out of apps, but not as concerned about the rot on the App Store in terms of spam and scam apps, and in terms of apps that fail for years, like Gmail on the iPad for 5 years to adopt platform standards like split screen multitasking. And all great point. But I look at that and think, well, the way you do it is you don't reject Gmail and say, no, you need to fix this because you're bad. What you do, and what they should have done, and where they seem to have taken their eye off the ball, is a year or two in, they should have said, okay, as of January 1st, 2017, iPad apps that don't support split view multitasking, or, you know, non-game, non-full screen iPad apps that don't support split view multitasking won't be allowed in the store. Like, you can come up with some definition for it, but what you're basically saying is you don't get to update your app anymore unless you support this feature, because this feature needs to be supported across. And they didn't do it. And I agree. I think maybe some of it is Apple with their eye off the ball, and some of it is Apple fearing that some of these companies are not going to do iPad apps like Instagram. But that would be another, by the way, another way that they could have driven support for the iPad is to say iPhone apps that don't support the iPad will not be allowed in the store beyond a certain time, right? They could do that, and then it's like, okay, what you gonna do, Instagram? What you gonna do now? But the fear is not be on your platform anymore. That wouldn't be so good. I don't know. Right. That's their control mechanism, is to just say, essentially, for compatibility reasons, for platform support reasons, you need to, you know, we're not going to allow apps that don't support this because they're outmoded. Or screen sizes, right? That was another one where it's like, beyond this point, we're not going to let you put the apps that don't support different screen sizes in. You got to do that. We're not going to let you in unless you do that. That's the way to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I thought he made a good, you know, it's always fun whenever you can dredge out a Steve Jobs quote, though those are, you know, occasionally double-edged swords. I thought, you know, that approach was very different in the earliest days, right? Apple, it kind of, you know, I feel like they kind of had to say going into it, like, yeah, we're not making any money off this. This is just to enable our platform. Because that was kind of the strategy back in those days. And the strategy has changed. I mean, services revenue has become their golden goose. I don't know. Is that the right white whale? One of those. It's a colorful animal. And it's,
yep,
you know, something where they have really prioritized, let's try and bolster this as much as possible.
Purple elephant, Dan. It's
their purple elephant. It's elusive, but you try to catch it. And I think that, you know, it's come with its fair share of problems in that regard. And I understand the concern over, you know, I think he takes a shot there, too, about the idea of, like, you know, iPad apps being dropped on the Mac with little change and being presented as great things, you know.
Right.
And I, you know, everybody's got a different takeaway and opinion on exactly what that signifies. And it's hard to say without getting into the criminology too much, like, what the strategy is here. But there are definitely places where we've all thought in the past several years, like, well, it seems like maybe they're focused on the wrong thing here. And I agree. I feel like there's an argument to be made for his curation, or, you know, point is kind of like, what if it was a smaller app store, but the apps were better? And it's like, I can see how users might benefit from that, but it comes with its fair share of risks, because a lot of people don't want to take the time to develop something and have to meet some other company's rigorous standards. And then you would end up with something that I think that looked a lot more potentially like the old Apple TV prior to tvOS,
right?
Where it was like, here are 12 channel partners that we work with. And if you want
to
make an app, you got
to
go through Apple. And it's like, well, you can argue a lot of things about how bad tvOS is right now in some cases. But what you can't argue about is that there's an app for every streaming service, basically. So, you know, that it has its upsides, but I think it's also got its downsides in terms of how much control you want to exert on your ostensible partners.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it does seem like Apple has all the leverage here, but there's a degree to which you can't push it. Although Gruber makes a point in the context of regulation that I think also works in terms of shame, which is, Apple is much less likely to receive public shame by forcing developers to adopt features that benefit users and that were introduced to the platform a few years before than to wring money out of them, right? Like, you're not going to get a big scandalous story that is, how dare Apple suggest to giant company Google that they have their apps actually work on their modern platform, right? Like, how dare they? That's not a story that's going to scan.
It is a more fun example. I mean,
because let me tell you, those Google iPad apps are scandalous all on their own.
They're pretty bad.
They're
bad. It is fun when people go crying to antitrust regulators, you know, then about their apps not being like, oh, they're forcing us to make our apps good, and it's like, yeah, there's no sympathy there. Ooh. I think probably. But yeah, when you get money into the equation, it changes everything immensely. And, you know, would that we lived in a world where Apple felt confident enough about its products that it could just say, like, you know what, we really don't care about making money from the App Store. You know, we're going to operate at break even because we think that's that is the right move for bolstering all of our, you know, device sales and stuff.
But and we make money from all those devices anymore that are running on the App Store, and that's where we make our money.
It used to be that way, but that's just not the case anymore, because as we've talked about a lot, like, you know, they're looking at the future of the iPhone and they're looking at the future of their products and thinking, well, sooner or later, you know, we have nowhere to go but down. So maybe we just got to diversify. We got to hedge a little bit.
Well, and even not even down, but like just even flat or very low growth. It's like, well, where's the next thing coming from? It's like, this is an incredibly profitable business, but that's not how businesses work. That's not how it works in our system. They don't go, oh, well, we're done. We'll just sit here on our cash, right? So they're chasing the next big things, which are wearables and services right now. Those are the categories that are growing for them, and they're the ones that they cart out every time that there's a corporate disclosure. That's the stuff they mention. Do you want to talk about your iPad OS 14? Because you did write, you know, a few thousand words with some pictures and a video about the public beta.
Yeah, I you know, the iPad for me is always a tool that is, I've mentioned before, it's the one that I go to for installing the betas on first, because it's something that I don't find critical to my workflow. I do use it a lot, but it's not something, you know, if it totally died or, you know, couldn't work because of the beta, I would just be like, oh, that's annoying, but I would switch to my laptop or I would do more work in my iMac or whatever. So my relationship with it is perhaps not as close as you, who is somebody who uses it a lot more than I do. But that said, I am intrigued. This time around, I think, as I put in my piece, it's a weird contradiction because there is a lot of excitement around what iOS 14 allows. And as usual, the iPad gets many of those features, but it does not get most. And in fact, it doesn't get a few of the most prominent and sort of radical feature changes, which I thought was an interesting choice, right? Like, we talked about the fact that you can't put widgets anywhere other than that one little column that we've had since last year. You can't get access to the app library or hide your home screens or anything like that. And I think it's an interesting choice. And Apple has made it clear that it feels like that was a choice, right? That was not an oversight or something, that like they made a deliberate like decision not to implement that on the iPad. And it's weird. It's weird. And the only sort of, you know, I don't want to say charitable, but like the perhaps conspiracy theory end of it is like, well, maybe they are planning more radical home screen redesigns in iPad OS 15. And they're just like, well, you know, we're going to do something that befits the iPad more, but we don't have time to do it until next year. So we're just going to leave it as it is. I'm not sure that's a good rationale, even if it were true, but such is the way. I think what's most interesting about the iPad this year is the amount of time they spent on pencil stuff, because that is something that is unique to the iPad. We have, you know, never had pencil support on the iPhone. You know, there are, again, conspiracy theories that maybe the new Macs, the Apple Silicon Macs, maybe, hey, while we're at it, we'll put pencil support in. But to date, that has not materialized. So it's an iPad only thing.
And would require, I would argue, I mean, Mike and I talked about this on Upgrade a while ago, that it might... I would argue pencil support on a Mac would require an ergonomic redesign of the Mac that they may or may not be ready to do, right? You'd almost need it to be like a convertible laptop or the Surface Studio style iMac. Yeah. And that's a big change to get the pencil. Not that they won't do it maybe at some point, but like for the foreseeable future, at least.
When
like,
you don't even have a touchscreen.
Yeah,
you know,
it's the iPad. Start slow, Apple. Start slow, maybe. But
yeah.
Yeah.
So the improvements that have been made with the pencil are actually pretty impressive. I mean, they're not perfect, but I have to say I've been really impressed with what they've done. First of all, with the addition of Scribble, which basically lets you write anywhere and have your writing immediately convert to text, which I think I compared to the Newton in my piece, definitely has shades of that. That was a thing that was hidden on the Mac for many years.
Right. Inkwell.
Was Inkwell, right? Because you could write on a tablet. Yeah. And like if you had a graphics tablet, you could write on that and it would get converted. But Apple, and then there was a way to hack it at one point, I think, where you could kind of trick it with a trackpad. But I, you know, Apple has had that technology for a long time and has worked on that technology in various ways. It just wasn't something that ever made a lot of sense on the Mac. And of course, you know, we're using a pencil on an iPad is much more natural for that. And so I think, let me put it this way. I don't think anybody, or I think very few people, are going to use the pencil as their primary manner of input on the iPad. It's slower. It's less precise for a lot of things. That said, if you are somebody who is using your pencil frequently and you're, say, an artist or somebody who's likes to take notes or whatever, having to not have to switch back and forth from, oh, I'm holding a pencil, let me put it down, and then bring up the keyboard, yep, and then type my response to this text message. Go. I think that's a real win.
That's it. I mean, as somebody who only uses the pencil to edit podcasts, I have even run into that. And I'm not
sure.
I imagine people who use it more frequently even run into it, where it's like, there's a mode switching moment where you're like, oh, I gotta type something, and you gotta, you know, set where am I gonna put the pencil down, and now I got my, and then reposition the iPad, and now I'll type a thing, and then I'm done, and now I gotta go find the pencil and pick it back up and reposition the iPad back. Like, it's no good. It's like, it was a serious pain point of using the Apple Pencil that this just solves. Plus, if you're in that state a lot, or if you're doing note taking, right? Like, because that's the other thing that
Yeah. And the note taking, which is another, it's funny because they're similar, but they're not the same.
Right.
In fact, they're two different modes, really, is the, like, I'm handwriting and having my handwriting converted to text, and I'm note taking in notes and just, you know, it's left as is.
And in the background, it's recognizing it's that that's text and. Yeah. And it's so clever because it's like,
it's really smart.
It recognizes that it's text, so it groups it so you can move it and select it and stuff. It's selectable. You can copy it as an image or you can copy it as the OCR text. And although, and it's not really even OCR because that's like optical. And one of the things that they're doing here is they're
machine learning.
Obviously, they're looking at the strokes that you're putting down. And right. So it's not the end result. It's also the path your pencil took in drawing the character. And they can they can intuit it. So that's all in there. But they used to OCR your text so you could search.
Right.
But that causes, and I've talked about this before, but like the difference between that and OCRing it so that you can see it or copy it is when you index it, you can OCR it and you know, you look at a word and you're like, oh, well, there are four words this could be. And you just put them all in the index for search.
Sure.
And one of them is probably right. And if you ever done that and then searched for the wrong thing and been like, why is it? And it's like, oh, it must have thought that word was this word. But it also thinks that word is the right word because it's every word has got like multiple possibilities and they all go in the search index.
Yeah, you do a sort of confidence, relevance. And
but when you copy it, it has to pick one, right? Like, so you got to be much more confident about what word that is in order to do that. And that's what they built in.
Yeah, and the stuff that they've done with that is really, it's really impressive, I have to say. Like, I pointed out in the piece that, like, since it's essentially text, it can use data detectors, which is kind of just bananas when you're thinking about it. Like, okay, I'm going to write an email address, then I'm going to tap on that email address and send an email to it. Like, that, it's just such a weird mixture of analog and digital. I find it fascinating, and it makes perfect sense. It's totally a logical conclusion, but it's just not a way that we're used to interacting with handwritten text. So I think that's just something that, for note takers especially, I think will make a big deal, because you can start putting in things like locations and, you know, oh, I got to write down this URL so I can check it out later. And again, all you need to do is like, oh God, what was that URL? Was it a this? Or like, do I have to type? Let me transpose this over to a keyboard. And instead, you can just be like, oh, just open that URL. For me, it's reminded me that I'm terrible at handwriting, and I am embarrassed by my handwriting being so bad, because I have definitely not spent a lot of time handwriting things since high school, maybe college. And it is amazing to me still how good it is, even with my terrible handwriting. It makes errors for sure, especially when I do the scribble thing. I think that has a lot more risk. It seems very akin to autocorrect in the sense that, like, sometimes it just gets it wrong, but it's better than I thought it would be by a lot. And the text, like note writing stuff, because again, it doesn't really worry about it too much until you start copying and pasting stuff. I think is a lot of power to it. And it's smart enough to recognize other things too, like shapes, and ignore them, so that when you're selecting text, it's really only text. You can move the text around and insert new information in there. It's got all these gestures for editing text when you're writing with the pencil with scribble, which is also kind of wild.
I love how it teaches you too. When you first do it, it says, let me explain how this works. And like, here are the gestures. And it's not like, because they're not... things you would discover. So the idea that, you know, you do a line or you hold the pencil in between and then write. And like, it's very, very well done.
Some of them are a little wonky. Like I found a lot when I try to do the scribble out to delete something, it selects it instead, which is a little awkward. And then you start, that's also weird because you still end up in that mode switching thing where it's like, well, now I've gone from writing things to dealing with like a UI where I'm tapping buttons. And I think that's just a harder jump to overcome there because, you know, you're not going to create an entirely different UI. But it is pretty cool. And it's another great example of a technology that Apple can leverage that is impressive in just the sheer cleverness that it depicts. I think that is clearly a thing that they spent a lot of time on. They've leveraged a whole bunch of the machine learning and AI stuff in order to better process this. And it's really, I think, paid off. I'm just curious to see how much people end up actually using it, because I think the pencil is already a subset of iPad users. And then people who are using that for, you know, regularly is probably even a smaller subset. So I think there is a group of people who will be very excited about this. I'm not sure it's a feature that most people are going to use, but it's great that it's there because it did always feel like something that was kind of lacking when you had like, well, I'm holding my pencil, as you said, now I got to go type things. I'm clutching my pencil weirdly in a hand and typing with my thumbs, etc. And it's an interesting choice. So that's kind of the highlight to me of the iPad OS 14 release, is all the work that they spent on the pencil. Because then when you kind of start digging into it beyond that, it turns out, yeah, there's some nice changes here, but a lot of it does not really impact your day-to-day.
Right. The shortcuts, I'd say the shortcuts thing for me, in the beta, shortcuts don't work right. And it's like if you rely on shortcuts,
there are some problems.
This is why I have not installed the beta on my main iPad, because like I rely on shortcuts and stuff breaks. Like stuff breaks in shortcuts anyway. I discovered recently that they changed how grep works, how regular expressions work in some update. And a lot of my expressions just stopped working until I made changes to them. But in the betas, it's a rough ride. So, props to Federico, who lives on shortcuts because he has to deal with this stuff. And Matt Casanelli, too. They are... Because it's like, so seriously, from beta to beta, different things break in shortcuts. It's amazing. So, but the benefits there for the iPad are huge because, like, you can do split screen, which is, let me just say, it's so hard to, like, copy things from one shortcut to another. I've done things like take screenshots and then put them in photos in split screen so I can remake this in a different shortcut with the same. It's just... So it's way better now, and they have the sidebars. The sidebars everywhere, I think, is actually a thing that you notice and you realize, like, it doesn't seem weird if you use the Mac, right? Because it's like, oh, like, Photos has a sidebar now. And when they announced that, I laughed because I'm like, you mean, like, the Mac version? And it's literally the same sidebar, right? Like, so some of that stuff is nice, but you're right. I think that they put clearly one of the main pillars of this release for iPad is Pencil. Also, I will say again, let's give them credit for the mouse support, because that appeared in late iOS 13, but like that's a 2020 major iPad update that they rolled into a previous version for hardware reasons. And, you know, that I'm going to give them credit for that in terms of their overall iPad score. I got to spend my time, which was kind of delightful, on the iPhone. I just got like use the iPhone, and I wrote my story about the iPhone because you were doing the iPad. And that was fun. I actually had a basically blank iPhone 11 I got it with me right now. And I put the beta on it and popped a SIM card in. And you know what? I love it. It's great. I might put this on my actual phone. The widgets are so good. Like, they're really good.
I, you know what? I'm struggling a little bit with the widgets on the home screen, if only because... So I dragged one over the other day, and I was like, oh no, my home screen like has for years been the same. And so all of a sudden, I was like, I can't move these Fs. My muscle memory... Because today, even, like, what happened was I dragged it in, And I was like, I'm not ready for this yet. So I dragged it back out and it had rearranged all of my apps. And I was like, oh no. So I like went through and tried to like remember where everything was. And even this morning, I went to open it up and automatically hit like reminders or something. And it hit the, it opened the home app. And I was like, what? What just happened? I was like, oh no. I had those two swapped. But like my thumb knows exactly where the app is.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to take some getting used to the idea that you've got these big, because they're big, right? Like the small widget is 2x2 in terms of icons, because there's an icon grid, right? So it takes up 4 icons, and the medium one is 2x4, so that's 8. That's 2 full rows of your home screen.
Right. Yeah, that's the thing. It's not just one row; it's 2 rows.
Yeah, it's
because I have a blank row on my home screen.
Right. So one small widget will fit and not. And push things around, but it will actually fit on your home screen because it will push everything down by 4, by the equivalent of one row. But and you know, might just vary based on the size. I'm not sure it does. If you've got an enormous, ginormous phone versus the anyway, it doesn't matter. I like them. I think they're very well done. I'm looking forward to what the third party widgets are like, but the Apple widgets are all I think very well done. I love widget stacks. I feel like this is an area where Apple misfired a little bit in the keynote in terms of their emphasis, because they talked about smart stacks, which was the idea that like the Siri watch face on Apple Watch, you can put down a stack and it basically like guesses what widgets you want to see, and then you can flip through your most common widgets and all that. But like there's also just stacks where you can stack a bunch of same sized widgets in a pile, and you can actually even choose those to smart rotate, where you choose what widgets go in the stack, but the system will try to guess which one is context appropriate and float it to the top. And then you can flip through those up or down, and you can just kind of flick through them. So you can have multiple widgets from the same app too. So like I have a weather widget with my temperature and stuff, but my mom lives in Arizona, and this time of year, I do enjoy like flipping over and seeing just how brutally hot it is at my mom's house, and then I flip back to how not hot it is here in the Bay Area. And you can do that, right? Like you can put, I've got those in there in a calendar widget, and it's a change. It's not going to change the world, right? These are fairly simple, but like it turns those home screens from a launcher into kind of like an information center and launcher. And I like them a lot, and having them mix and match with apps, because I feel like the prime real estate is page one of your iPhone.
Sure.
And if you can put some information that you want to see out there on the top level, then you don't, you know, you may go to the home screen to launch an app, and instead you may just go to the home screen to get a piece of information, and you get it and you move on and you don't even launch it. So I think they're really well done, and I'm looking forward to seeing what widgets grow. And I enjoy how they've built it around the grid, so that you've got kind of the apps just wrapping around these widgets when they're placed there. I think they did a very nice job.
Yeah, I think it is for sure one of those things where I'm going to need to spend some time really thinking about how that works.
Yes, and how you want to use it, right? Because that's what information do you want to put out there, or is it pointless to have it out there? And some of them I look at and I think, I don't know why I would want this here. But, you know, it may turn out that like page 2 has got a bunch of widgets on it, and you know, it's all just like if you want to play some music and the music widget is going to suggest a playlist or album or something to listen to. So you can just go, oh, yeah, that sounds good. Tap on it and start playing music. It's like maybe that ends up being a good use case, or maybe it's exactly what you don't want. That's part of the mystery of it. The edit pages, though, is also a stroke of genius, right?
Like, yeah, that one is also going to take some getting used to, because I had a bunch of folders on my... So I had 2 screens of apps, and then the third screen was all folders.
Yeah.
And there are a couple things in there that, you know, honestly maybe should have been on one of the first 2 screens, but I just had... Again, I've internalized muscle memory. I know which folders they're in. And so I did that again, where I hid that screen, and then I was flipping over the app library, and like all of a sudden my thumb is like... I want to hit this button over here where the app should be, but that's not where the app is anymore.
Yeah. Well, so much of the iPhone is geographical memory, and like retraining is going to be a part of it. I do like the idea, though, of those pages or page of like folders full of garbage just going away, and instead using those pages for things that, because the truth is, I never launch an app inside a folder, right? Like if it's in a folder, I'm just going to search for it and launch it that way. And so hiding the page that's got the apps I'm never going to tap on is great. If there's something I actually tap on, I should probably get it out of a folder and onto a page that I'm not hiding. I also appreciate that you can hide them, so you could like make them come back later. And I've seen some people speculate that like you could do like real day phone and night phone stuff here, where you could have like a work page, and then when you leave work, you turn off that page. And then you don't see it, which is kind of cool. I kind of like that, too. That's an interesting idea. One of the things I mentioned in my story in terms of like criticism of this is I feel like they built the whole new app library thing as the last page, essentially. It's not quite a page. It's like a pseudo page where you've got a search for apps. If you tap on the search box, it will give you an alphabetical list of apps. And then they've got a bunch of little foldery things that are actually shaped like 2x2 widgets that will recommend apps via Siri or via category or things you've recently added. Or if you use Test Flight, it makes a little Test Flight group. And what's funny about those is that the big icons there are tappable. They are just apps that you can tap to launch, which is I tapped them the first time thinking it'd be a folder that would open.
The same thing.
The little 4x4 mini icons, that group pops up and then you tap one, but the big ones they just open.
The mini ones even are like giant folders, and some of them are because they're smart folders. Like I used to have a folder named Productivity, still do, I guess it's just hidden, but I like the top one for me is one of them is Productivity. I tap on that and all of a sudden it's showing me like all of these apps, some of which I did not previously have categorized, like it's like Slack and Mail are in there. It's like, wait a second, I don't,
because it's using like App Store categories or something.
Exactly.
Yeah. But so I like the app library. I like it. My problem with it is it's on the last page. It's after the last page, and that there's still the search screen where you pull down and you can launch. Now they've added a bunch of stuff to the search screen. The search screen is becoming more like a Siri interface. / Spotlight interface. You can still launch apps from it, but it's adding, like, you can type in my screenshot, I typed like, how old is Buster Posey, which is my standard Siri query. He keeps getting older, but you can do that in the search window now, and it gives you essentially the Siri response. So they've done all that kind of stuff in there. But I look at it and I think these things are still too much alike, and the search didn't change that much. App Library comes in and I have this moment of like, which is which? And the truth is, I doubt I'm going to use App Library because I'm just going to pull down and type the name of the app and launch it right from that screen. And I don't know really what the solution is here. My feeling is that maybe they should be the same. Maybe there should be one control center for finding things on your iPhone and not two, one app focused and one app plus everything else focused. They could take it away. They could say, look, the search is for searching data, not quick launching apps, and the app library is for quick launching apps. But obviously the argument there is, yeah, but it's really good for quick launching apps, so we should leave
it's
it.
It's great for quick launching
apps. I think the truth is maybe that my opinion, and I'm sure lots of people at Apple argued about this a lot, but like my feeling is these things are too much alike and they either need to be merged together or split apart, because it's not, so, you know, I feel like they need to rethink the geography of the things that are not on the home screen but that are related to the home screen. And that's App Library at the end, it's the search box at the top, it's the Today view to the left, it's the,
which also has a search box,
it's got the notification center that is the swipe down from the top rather than the pull down. Like there are a bunch of different things surrounding the home screen, and I'm not sure they're as cohesive as they should be. And the search and the App Library are the ones where it really hits me in the face of like,
well, it's weird, too, in the search, especially because that was something that did get a revamp on the iPad, right? It looks way more like the Mac now. When you hit search, a floating bar comes up rather than the whole screen getting taken over. And overall, like, this whole compact UI thing that they've been pushing, especially on the iPad, does make a big difference because it makes the computer, it makes it feel more like, I used to use the word computer,
yeah.
makes it feel more like a computer, right? Because it's not like it's a modal thing where all of a sudden it's like, I'm in search mode or I'm in Siri mode, right?
You know, one of the problems
with
that,
else going on here.
One of the problems with that search on the iPad, though, is that unless you're at the home screen, and this is true on the iPhone too, unless you're at the home screen, you can't trigger it. Like you have to use the keyboard to trigger it, and you can get it anywhere.
Right, right.
But like if you're not using a keyboard, it only works out of the home screen. And I think that's actually an interesting question of like, should there be a search gesture? Should it be found in, you know, in some other move that you could do from anywhere, whether it's sort of like out of control center, maybe that becomes something different. And I get this is hard because you can't have a widget, a whatchamacallit, a whirligig, a thingamajig, mm-hmm. in every little corner of the interface, right? Where it's like, well, if you tap, I mean, it's bad enough that it's pull down from the upper right and you get control center, and pull down from the upper center and you get notifications. And it's like, really? It's that close? And they're sticking with that one, right? But so I appreciate the difficulty here. But like search probably should be accessible via a touch gesture from everywhere. And it's not.
Right, yeah.
And that's not good.
Point.
Right,
because I use the keyboard all the time, and it's a natural thing. Although it does feel weirder now when you are in mail and you hit the command space bar, and it's like, oh, I'm still in mail, and I guess I'm searching. Am I searching mail? Am I searching everything?
Searching everything.
Am I launching an app?
Yeah.
I mean, it is a little confusing. I actually thought one of the best tips I came across, which I can't remember where it came from now, but was to turn off the Siri suggestions in the search on the iPad, because that does is essentially takes over the top, like, first screen of results of, like, here's all the things you might want to search for on Google. And I feel like that's not useful to me. I rarely want to search Google from that bar. What I want to search is stuff that's on my iPad. And when you turn that off, that screen becomes way more usable because most of the hits are now stuff that's on your iPad. So I think that is a nice improvement there.
Right. So I don't have an answer here. It's just I'm asking the question. Like, it seems like it's, I appreciate that App Library got added, but it seems not to be harmonious with some of the stuff that was already installed. And there's a mm-hmm. question of, like, at some point, if you're Apple, do you look at this and say, okay, we need to, I appreciate that maybe they can't do it all at once, but we need to give a bigger rethink to sort of how all of these things interact. Because I would argue that, like, the Today View, although it's nice that you can have widgets that aren't out on your home screen, like the Today View notification center, like those could get a rethink, right? Those,
it's not as useful. I've never found it as useful as I hoped it would be on the iPad and the iPhone. I mean, even as I had moved away from using like Dashboard on the Mac, which I used to use, but like at a certain point, it just became another place that I never went. It's like having a room in your house that's just got a bunch of like storage in it, right? It's like, yeah, I guess there's stuff in there that might be useful, but I'm just not going through the trouble of going to that room.
The Today View is essentially widgets plus a search box, which is just like the search box that you can get by pulling down, except then it's got Siri suggestions, which are the same suggestions in the App Library. Again, I'm just saying, for future use in a future iOS, I feel like Apple needs to revisit how all these things work together. Anyway, that's something I thought of.
I will say I do appreciate the being able to, as you said, being able to hide home screens, I think is huge. I think that should be on the iPad 100%. I don't get their rationale for it. I will say the other thing that I do like about the App Library page is the when you go into that search mode and it just gives you a list. An alphabetical list of all your apps.
Right, you have to tap on the search button, and then you get an alphabetical list of apps.
I kind of feel like I would rather just have that, mm-hmm. maybe even than the automatic mm-hmm. little groups.
Well, I think that's what I was... If I had to make a proposal, and this is off the top of my head, I would probably propose that search field that you get when you swipe down be... Mixed with the apps, at least before you search, it should have the App Library there. And then when you search, you would get other things instead of the App Library, but those little App Library suggestions when you pull down would just be there. I'm not sure what you'd put in the Today view, but again, I feel like that is ripe for some conversation. But what I would do is I would make where the App Library is right now, I'd just make that the alphabetical list of apps open, right. just yeah. open. And you could search from it too, but like without a tap, it would just be the alpha list with the search box at the top. And I'd move the rest of the stuff into the pull down search part as an initial view. And I say that because it is, in for some people at least, the most logical way. Because honestly, let's just be honest here. As whizzy as the app library is, do you go to your iPhone and say, I just don't know which app to open? Right. I hope that I could see some apps I have and find an app that I could open. I like the idea. I'm not sure that that's how people use their iPhone. I think alphabetical list, I'm a big fan of the alphabetical list, because what you're really doing is trying to find an app. Now, maybe Apple feels like, nope, what people really do is they're lost. They don't know what they want. I need productivity. What app can give me productivity?
Apps. They forget which apps they have installed.
I guess.
I mean, so yeah, I think you're right. I think the one thing in there that is useful to me, and I've liked it in the search field for a long time, is the suggested apps, because I frequently find that it is pretty good about figuring out what app I want.
I need to adjust my sprinkler controller, and I swear every time I swipe down to go launch the sprinkler controller app, it's in Siri suggestions. It's like, how does it do it? Right?
That one is definitely, I mean, because I for sure, like, whenever time I, this is an easy one, but like, I go to do my weekly grocery shopping and over at Whole Foods or whatever, and it's like, oh, you want that Whole Foods app that lets you scan your barcode?
Yep.
It knows I'm here, right? Like, it knows when I go grocery shopping. I think more often than not, there's at least, you know, if I have it on the double, like, row too, where it's got like 8 app suggestions, and I feel like, usually the app I'm looking for is in there, or then I can search for it, right? Like, that makes sense, because it's like, I'm going there to launch an app. It's either going to be something that's suggested for me, or I'm going to go, nope, it's not one of those. Let me just type in the search. That works well, because it's like, either way, I'm going to the same place. But yeah, now adding a whole separate thing to the mix feels like, I don't know, why should I go to that screen instead of just searching? Yeah, I don't know. But I'm glad that I can hide the screen full of folders, because it does feel like then the home screens become more useful. So I haven't quite gotten, like, figured out what my new setup is going to be and how I'm going to work widgets into all of this. And I don't know, maybe I'll just have a screen that's all widgets. But I think it's making changes, which is good. And I think this is the most important thing about it, is like the whole, you know, sacred cows thing, where it's like, we haven't changed the home screen really in like 10 years. Maybe it's time we start rethinking and asking whether or not this is still the best way of doing things, rather than just assuming that it's the best way of doing things. So that I applaud. Is this the perfect solution? No, but if Apple, you know, prior, you know, years are any indication, I think in a year or two we'll be like, you know what, we've seen, you know, spent a lot of time figuring out how people use these new features, and we've decided to make some refinements based on that, and it may be a lot better.
Yeah. I recommend the bike map thing. I think that's going to be really good. Unfortunately, it's only in a handful of places right now.
Can't use it here.
But
don't have it.
But it's if they can get that to work in more places, like, because I was impressed. I put in a thing where I know that I've got a big bike path, and it knows that bike path is there. I really like the climb things, because so often, because I am not a bicyclist of any skill, so often I get these like, oh boy, that hill's gonna kill me, I can't do that, I don't have an e-bike or anything, I just have a regular bike. And so it shows you like how bad is the climb here, how bad's it gonna be, and you can tell it to avoid hills, and you can it's got all the details.
That,
it's very
that
smart.
That was something where Google had been eating their lunch for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
It was one of the things that people kept Google Maps around for. I know our friend Paul Kafasis, I think, had been for years complaining about, like, there's still no bike directions. And, you know, that had to be there. Like, that was just something they needed to check off eventually. And I'm glad they got around to it. But, it's going to take some time to really finish mapping that for all of the locations that they're available.
Yeah, but it does, like, I'm looking at one now, and it's giving me a suggestion that's along the freeway, and then there's a less busy one, and I can look at the climb, and that's really interesting, because I can actually see that the road that I perceived as being not as hilly is actually more hilly.
Ooh.
So it's making recommendations about, like, how that works. It's very clever, very clever.
I played a little bit with the translation app the other day. I think that is an interesting choice. The hard push into translation for Apple is interesting because it feels like something that, again, is a service that's not something that Apple has spent a lot of time on before. And it's a place where Google, and to a lesser extent Microsoft, have really been the dominant players in that market. Google especially, right? Google Translate is just, it's the de facto, you know, option for translating text in different languages. And Apple gets to take a shot at Google by saying, ours is done all on device and it's private and all of that. And, you know, they've built it into Safari, right? So you can tap a button and it will translate a web page for you. And it's not bad. I've tried it out in a couple places where it's like, you know, I went to a French newspaper and was like, all right, give me this article in English. And it's like, yeah, any machine translation is going to have some weaknesses, things that don't translate or are colloquial or what have you. But, you know, you can get the gist of what it is.
Yeah.
So that wasn't terrible. The app is, I will say, it doesn't quite have in this beta state like the polish, I think, that Google Translate does, which is obvious because Google Translate has been around for years and years and years. They're aping some of the features that Google Translate has, but I think Google does them slightly better. Like there's the translation mode where you hold it sideways and it's supposed to like let you auto detect which language people are speaking. Google Translate has a conversation mode where you can have like two people talking at the same time and it will translate back and forth between the two of them. And it's impressive. It works a bit better than Apple's. Not to say Apple couldn't get there, but I find it an interesting move for them that they have spent a lot of time talking about this and a lot of time demoing it, and clearly a lot of time and money on building this feature.
Yeah, I hope it keeps getting better. Love that they do on device, because mm-hmm. you're often, if you're traveling, you may be in a place with low connectivity or no connectivity. So being able to mm-hmm. do it on device is good. On device is also good for privacy reasons, which is why one of my things that I keep mentioning, and I'm going to just do it again, which is translation and messages. One of the arguments against translation and messages is privacy. But if it's all on device, that argument goes away. And I'm kind of surprised it's not in here, but like, messages should recognize when you receive a message in a different language and offer mm-hmm. to translate it on device, and then offer to translate your response on device, right? Like, this needs to be the next phase of this, right? We should be in a situation where, and honestly, something like mail should probably do it too, right? They should need to build translation services into their products so that you have the ability to do that, because that opens up conversation with people all over the world. And by having it be on device, you're not actually, you know, leaking people's words to services that could be unscrupulous or anything like that.
Right.
And then
that's
any
a great point.
Any app could tie into that, presumably, and basically just say, is this in another language? If so, translate it.
If they can do that in Safari, there's zero reason they can't do it in any other app.
So, you know, and they'll probably get there. But that was just a thought that I had, is that needs
that's
to
a good
be
point. It's a good point.
A little bit better, but
I need to expand the languages too, because right now I went to go look at like what's the name of the Mac site in Japan, Mac Otakara.
Yeah,
like it's fairly well known. It's around, been around for a long time, and I was like, oh, I wonder if I can just go read an article in there. But it doesn't support Japanese yet, so
yeah,
soon I'm sure.
Yeah, and then the other one I want to mention is Well, I'll mention the in Maps, the EV thing, only because it's the one with the huge asterisk, which is it has to be in supported cars. And I don't know the details. All right. And I don't know whether it's the car models or whether it's the car makers have to update their apps. But what Apple Maps wants is it wants to know your EV's battery status, as well as some information about like what charger it uses and all of that. But it wants to know, as far as I can tell, it really does want to know like your EV's range, so that it can make some decisions about, because the EV stuff, it's going to tell you where you need to stop and charge on a trip. So if you're going on a road trip, you go 400 miles in an EV, you're going to need to stop and recharge. And it needs to know, you know, what car you've got with what connectors and what your range is, and then it can plot it out, which is fine. I just wonder, you know, is this going to be one of those features where everybody who's got an EV made in the last 4 or 5 years is going to get an app update and it's going to work with Apple stuff? Or is it going to be one of those features where there's like a new spec for EVs to talk to smart devices, and the first EVs that support this are going to be, you know, 2020 model year, and it will be useless for anybody with an older model. My EV has so little range that it's pointless for me because I can't go anywhere in it. It's a town car, essentially. But like that's one of those things where it's a great idea because I've used other apps that do this, and they're bad. They're really bad. So to have it be integrated into Apple Maps and presumably into CarPlay, that's really nice. But that may be like some of these other features like Car Key, it may be and App Clips, something that sounds good but won't impact your life directly right away because the compatibility, it relies on third parties for compatibility to actually do its job.
Yeah. No, I don't have an electric car, so I guess that's not...
Well, don't try it. It's not, you're not in a compatible vehicle then.
That's true. And it gives, when it starts giving me the gas prices, then I'll know. Or just telling me how much more I could save if I had an electric car.
Yeah, that would be a thing that they could do, but I think it's probably too much work. Is like, what's the range of your car? Where are you going to have to stop for gas? You know, but they'll get there.
Yeah. I was going to say just a brief thing that I think flew under the radar yesterday because it was beta day. I did notice that iWork apps got an update. And
yes.
I will mention that the Numbers app actually got a pretty substantial one, including a whole bunch of new formulas, including regular expressions as a formula, which is kind of a big deal. There were at least a couple other things there. I weren't sure if they were new, but there were functions that I had been waiting for. So, for example, you've long been able to do a sum if or an average if, where it's like average these values if this condition is met, which is very handy. And they have now min ifs and max if, which is great because that was really hard to do otherwise, but they still lack a median if, which I would like. But maybe I can find a way of faking that. But they have a bunch more like powerful functions that they apparently have added in this new version, which again, flew a little under the radar because I know that's not everybody's cup of tea, but I think that's cool. And a Keynote, I think, added a thing for doing a slideshow presenting in a window to make it easier to basically Keynote stuff when you're on a video call, which is also a smart move because that is something that obviously
that
people are doing a lot more of. Yeah. So.
Yeah, I need to check because I use Numbers sometimes on my iPad when I'm traveling, which I'm not now. And it has made me keenly aware of exactly what features do not exist on iPad in Numbers that exist on the Mac.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a few in the corners,
there
but yeah, it's a nice update to all those iWork apps, and they seem to have reversioned them all as 10.0.
Yeah, that was it must have been done a little while ago because this version is 10.1. But I think I was just looking at that because
that
I also
one?
Noticed it. Yeah, so yeah, but I was kind of like, oh, that's weird. When did that become? Oh, I guess with the last one. Whenever that came out.
Yeah, I'm looking the pages that I'm... Oh, well, I guess you're right. The 10.1 updates are up at the top.
Yep,
and then the 10.0s are below.
Below.
So
that,
the last update they did they decided to push everything to 10 just to get them in sync, maybe? I don't even know. But yeah, they did their 10.1 updates. It's good. And right, the 10.0, you know, the 10.0 was the trackpad stuff.
Oh, right. That makes sense.
So and this is some more good stuff, which is
those apps. You know what they I know people like to rag on them sometimes, but like they do seem like they have steady progress being made.
Oh yeah,
it seems like about three or four times a year there is a pretty good update coming. So it seems like they're on the treadmill for those, which is nice because there were long periods of time where it seemed like we just forgot about those, and then like 2-3 years later we're like we totally revamped it and made a new version.
I love Keynote. I think Keynote's the best in class. Having used PowerPoint, I love Keynote. That's what I'll
say like
about
Keynote
that.
A lot. And
Numbers
I'm not
Numbers is really good.
It's
weird in some ways that I use Excel for some things and Numbers for other things.
Yeah, so. my wife is a huge Excel user, and I find I have used Excel for stuff, but I think Numbers works really well with the stuff that I do or that I want to use it for. And so occasionally I do miss out on some of the features that like things that would be pretty easy in Excel. Numbers both does like, you know, 80 to 90% of what I need to do. And it looks so much better.
It does. I mean, that's why I use it for all my charts and stuff, is that it's just, it's gorgeous
exactly.
In a way. That
so I use that for, I have my big tracking spreadsheet, which I keep meaning to do an update post on at some point because I've revamped it a lot. But yeah, it works. Numbers works great for that.
And Pages is also a product. Anyway,
nope. I use it for some things. I use it for invoices.
Yeah, that's it. That's all I use it for too.
That's basically it. Yeah.
Okay. Well, beta is the summary. And thanks to everybody out there for subscribing to Six Colors. We appreciate it. We have begun, I should say, before we go, a little maintenance, a little work here. We have begun posting weekly member posts. This is the sort of what the newsletter content has become, is weekly member posts. So Stephen Hackett's piece about system preferences in macOS Big Sur went up this week for members. It's on the site in your RSS feed. It'll be in your email box later this month. And what piece will be up next week? I don't know. We haven't decided yet, but one of the ones that we write. And then at the end of the month, you get Dan's miraculous back page column where he is wacky.
Miraculous.
It's just a wacky, right, zany thing that ends your month.
It is indeed.
It's the back page of that month.
That's what I do. Wacky, so zany.
Thank you for supporting. You get those things. You get this thing. And you get the Slack if you want to be in there. And we appreciate you. But until then, until next time when Kalendar summons us next Friday, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.